Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, welcome to the Raw Wine 2023 Speaker's Corner. I'm Sam Van Ruby from the Grape Nation podcast on the Heritage Radio Network. Today, we're going to be talking about aging natural wines. You know, natural wines get a knock that there's no ageability, they're wines for now. So we have three winemakers. We're going to do vertical tastings, exploring the impact of time with these three growers. And we have two winemakers with three wines and one with two wines. And we're going to compare different vintages. So just first a little about Castilla y León, the region. And this is very basic. So along the way, if there's anything that's important to discuss, whether it's your winery or the region, you know, please, you know, jump in. But Castilla y León, located in the northwestern part of Spain, largest autonomous community of Spain's 17 administrative regions. It covers about 94,000 kilometers. It's a landlocked wine region surrounded by mountains, which is an important part of the climate. And most of the Douro River runs through the region. Portugal, just for you to imagine, is to the west. It's a little north. Portugal's to the west and below it. The climate generally, and each of these guys, you know, sort of have their own microclimate to some extent. The climate is a continental Mediterranean climate, which typically is long, cold winters, short, hot summers, and in most areas, there's a scarcity of rain. Castilla y León, if you know the name or not, it includes the great wine-growing regions of Ribera del Duero, Toro, Bierzo, Rueda, Ribes, Tierra de León, and that's just to name a few. There's a bunch of other ones. Typically, when people think of the region, they think of Tempranillo, and they think of Godello as a white wine. Those are the predominant grapes, but I think you'll see today that we'll be talking and tasting a lot of the other varietals, which is very exciting. So let's get started. We have three winemakers. For the sake of democracy, I put three numbers in a hat, in a cup, I'm sorry. And we pulled out the numbers. And it only makes sense to talk about the wines with each winery. So we're going to go winery to winery to winery and taste the wines. So based on what we pulled out of a hat, we're going to start with Kiko Calvo from Bodegas Bigardo. Then we're going to talk to Nacho from Demencia Wine. And we're going to wrap it up with Bodegas Coruña del Conde. So that's the way we're going to do it. I welcome any questions. You know, we'll stop at the appropriate time to ask questions. I encourage it. Don't feel embarrassed. Any question makes sense. So is everyone ready to get started? Let's talk and taste, all right? All right, Kiko Calvo, although loaded with multiple degrees in biology and enology, is not one to look at the past as far as winemaking. He's focused on the future. He grows what he calls free wines. Now, honestly, I don't know what that means, so he's going to help explain that. It's a personal interpretation of natural wines and artisanal wines without certifications or limitations in Toro near the Douro River. You know, so we talk a lot about certified organic, certified biodynamic, what's sustainability. You know, Kiko does it his own way, and we're going to talk about that. He's working with 40 to 100-year-old vines, which I think you're going to see, and you guys tell me otherwise. One of the prevailing good themes about this is there's a lot of old vines in the region, and most of you are farming, you know, old vines, which we all know produces incredible wines. So he's working with 40 to 100-year-old vines on 20 acres of his family's vineyards, and he oversees 10 acres, you know, under his control. So we're going to taste three of Kiko's wines. One of the wines, and he makes a bunch of wines, is a wine called Bigardo, B-I-G-A-R-D-O. And we're going to taste a 2015, a 2017, and a recent vintage, the 2022. 20. I'm sorry. I had 20. I just can't read my own handwriting. And I'll set it off this way, because Kiko, tell us a little about the wine and anything else. It's certainly one of your, is experimental the right word? Experimental red wines. And it's made with, and you have to help me with this. So I said earlier, Tempranillo is one of the predominant grapes of the region. Kiko makes this wine with a grape called Tinto de Toro, which he painfully says is not Tempranillo. No, so explain the difference before we taste.
Well, thank you for coming. It's a pleasure to stay here. The thing about the variety first is that, well, I am from Toro. I am in love with my place and with my land. And it's true that genetically, Tinta de Toro could be more or less the Tempranillo. And I don't want to be very boring about that. I love that that discussion, but I understand that this is not that that funny. But it's true that it's like dogs. There is no red line genetically to say that this grape is the grape A, the variety A, or the variety B. As I am a Toro soldier, I have to defend forever and ever that Tinta de Toro is not Tempranillo. That's all. It's true that there is an adaptation because in our region, the climate is a very extreme dry farm, I'm going to say. So the plant adapt to the conditions in a very extreme way, right? So the grape is smaller, the leaves is like more hairy. I mean, you feel differences even visually. Please makes me so happy if you say that you are going to taste the Tinta de Toro, no Tempranillo. Great.
All right, so let's pick up the first wine. So, Kiko, we're drinking the oldest vintage first, right? The 2015?
2015, yeah.
All right, so tell us a little about vintage year, the wine, blend.
Okay, so in 2014,
left to right,
I start the project. I start with the winery in the garage of my parents, classic. So 2014 was not was too much experimental, the vintage, so was not in the market. And 2015 is the first vintage that I put on the market, okay? We have 15, 17, and then 2020. Now in 2020, I vinificate in a new winery, in a new place, like with more space. I have, I can make more wines, and I am able to work with best conditions now. And I think that one of my characteristical or one of my differentiation during the winemaking or with the winemaking is that I conserve like the origin with these small micro vinifications. Where thinking in when I start in the garage of my parents, I take. Sometimes I stole to my father some grapes, 200 kilograms, for example, and I start to play to be a winemaker, right? I still love this way to make wine, and my biggest tank is one ton, is 1,000 kilos. So think that any vineyard, any parcel, you have like the top part of the parcel, the bottom. So it's true that when you are working with this parcel year and year, you feel differences as you know that some areas of the parcel are different. So what I want to make is to keep that differences in the wine. So I make different wines that here in 2015 I blend and I make just one label, one wine. But now I start to make single parcel wines and sowing or preserving or transmitting those differences in the parcel, in the vineyard. Okay. About the region, farming is kind of easy because it's a very dry place, so we have no fungi diseases. Yes, we have some yesca, of course, but
respond to this. So, in your own words, you say you're not organic, you're not biodynamic, but your word is logical.
I am free.
I am logical. So my assumption is that you follow those practices, but you don't want to be labeled or certified. How do you respond to that?
Let's show my cards. That's my label, okay? So that's, I think that this is like my philosophy, you know? For me means, for sure, Toro, my place, handmade. But it's only a question of freedom, you know? So, yeah, I respect. Of course, we are here. We are natural. We have some values about the future and the sustainability. But I'm not enjoying too much that limitations, you know? When it's like, okay, man, if you are natural, you have to do like that. Okay, I understand that. But why? I mean, any region, in Spanish we say, any maestrillo tiene su librillo. It's something like each teacher has his own manual, more or less. So, I prefer to make something logical.
Wait, manual or manual?
Manual of instruction.
Okay, go ahead.
Instruction, sorry, go ahead. Sorry, exactly. So... Yes. I love the concept of logical wines.
Which is your interpretation.
Which is my interpretation. And don't use yeast, because I don't need yeast. Because for me, for example, the microorganisms are the base of the terroir and the base of the differentiation. And I think that it's important to say that we don't know too much about microorganisms in wine. We think that we control the process. But, I am biologist, so I love that question. And we control some microorganisms, specifically, Saccharomyces cerevisiae, blah, 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 but we don't know what's happening in the soil. We try to preserve the soil and to take care about the soil, but all that connection with different species of microorganisms, we don't know too much about. So it's true that we do our best, but we have still too much work and too much things to learn to understand how to make wine, how to control the process.
All right, so let's everybody taste the first wine in front of you. We're going left to right, the 2015. So to keep you guys on task, the idea is talking about the ageability of these wines.
Okay.
And we're showing younger and older wines. So Kiko, this is a wine that's, you know, almost 9-10 years old in the bottle.
Yep.
Tell me a little about the vintage and anything else, blend, all that stuff.
Okay. So 2015 was, I remember this vintage, not a big quantity of grapes. The production was not very big in Toro. And in this blend, there are a big percentage, maybe 60-70% of the grapes are from a vineyard with more than 100 years old. We in Castilla y León, this is our treasure for sure. Those guys here are gonna tell about the old vineyards. Think that the roots are super deep, and now thinking in climatic change, when everything is like changing too fast and we cannot control that changes. When you have an old vineyard, everything is super stable because the roots are very deep, as I said.
Are they deep from age, or are they deep because they struggle because there's not a lot of water, or both?
Both. Okay. I would say it's true that when you have no water at the surface,
down.
They have to look for the water. But in general, the old vineyards, the roots are bigger, and the root system is like more developed, right? So here I think that we can find like a kind of more complexity, maybe due to these old vineyards. Thinking in old vineyards, visually, the grapes are smaller, the production is smaller, so everything is much more concentrated, right? And Toro is a place where the grape has everything, but has everything too much sometimes. I mean, if you don't take care with the alcohol, I make some wines with 17.6 with indigenous yeast, and you take the book of winemaking and say, no, at 15 degrees, the yeast are diet. No, in my place, my friend. So we have to take care with that. So the acidity is very important. One of my obsessions is to keep good acidity because this when you have a voluptuous or a very a wine with a lot of volume, if you have good acidity, it helps with the balance for sure. So I think that this 2015 is a good example of a big wine with a good acidity and a good balance. Okay.
All right. So let's move to the 17 and let's do a comparison. So first, everybody pick up the middle wine, the 17. So we're looking at a wine with 6-7 years bottle age, 2 years after the first wine. Difference in vintage, you know, yeah. How do you look at the differences?
I think that this vintage 2017 was a little bit more fresh, maybe, more colder. And we can feel that in the aromatic profile.
Does a cool vintage give you freshness?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think so. Well, we in Castilla y León, in La Meseta, makes sense in English? Yeah. Like in our Meseta, we are like around 700, 800, depending, right, of the area, but it's kind of good altitude. Very windy, as we are surrounded of mountains. And this helps for the ripeness of the grape, for sure. And with colder temperatures, you can feel different profiles of aromas. This is 17. And thinking in the 2020, here there is like a small jump, okay? Because in 2020, I
from make the 17 to the 2020?
To the 2020. Following the same philosophy of winemaking, for sure, but here I'm making in the new wine, okay?
So this wine is made in your new winery?
In my new,
and what, it's not fancy, does that impart anything to the wine? Is there any difference because of that?
I think that we are kind of afraid when you start in a new place because I think that we don't use yeast, right? So there's something magical that the yeast are on the walls and in everywhere. And when you make the wine in a new place, something is like strange, you know?
Right.
So you are waiting what's happening with the wine and if your microorganisms are working in the same way.
Did it seem that way or it went well?
Exactly. They are the good guys or they are becoming okay. Only the bad guys or, you know, something that we cannot control as I want.
So the 20, is it much different in your mind than the 17 and the 15 other than it's 5 years, 3 years older? I mean, how was the vintage and, you know, how would you describe
the vintage? It was kind of warm, this vintage, but it's true that there is differences also with the parcels that I use it. Same as in 2015, I use much old parcels for Bicardo. In 17, it's like 50-50 more or less. When we talk about old vineyards, we are talking with vineyards of 100 years old. And for us in Castilla y León, young vineyards maybe are vineyards with 40 or 50 years old, which in other places are old vineyards, really. I mean, it's depending on the reference, right? And here in 2020, all the vineyards for Bicardo are around 50 years old, which is a very good age for a vineyard, anyways. But we have like that kind of obsession sometimes. I want to say historically something that... I am very proud, why not, that Mr. Columbus, Christopher Columbus, he brings Toro wines in the boat to discover America because was very famous, the wine from Toro, to be very well preserved because was a very strong wine. Okay, we are going to talk about sulfur or not. I mean, 500 years
so
ago.
So two things.
Okay.
We'll talk about sulfur when and however you want. And remember, we're talking about the ageability of these wines. So what contributes to that? Maybe sulfur does in some ways.
That's it.
So, go ahead.
Like 500 years ago, I think that those guys never used sulfur. So what they have to preserve the wine is like much more maceration, much more extraction, so more other compounds, right, to be preserved. And, well, it's funny to know that historically the Toro wines, forgetting all our technology, are already good for to keep during for aging to keep during a lot of years. So this extreme dry farm of Toro, I think that make it much easier to make natural wines. Really, about the aging, well, we don't know too much about how this wine is evolving. But it's true that when you have a wine, you have a good acidity, everything in the wine is okay, you know that this wine is gonna evolve or have a very good evolution. But it's true that we cannot like visualize the wine. It's too much difficult to visualize the wine 6 or 7 years farther in the time, right? In the future.
Right.
I talk too much or not?
No, you don't talk too much. It's less talking I have to do. We're going to move along, but you three guys, you can jump in on anything at any time. Does anyone have any questions for Kiko on these three wines? All right. We'll move along. As I mentioned, we pulled numbers out of a hat. We're going to talk to Nacho Leon, who is in the middle. Nacho's from Demencia Wine. He makes wines in El Bierzo near the village of Valtuelle. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes.
Okay. He tends to around 10 hectares with over 30 parcels, again, of older vines. He works mostly with the Mencia grape, along with Godello, Tempranillo, Garnacha, Tintoria, and other varietals. The wine we're going to taste today is called Kashikan. And I guess, guys, we need to get that wine up here, right? Kashikan, it's a blend with grapes baked, dating back to his 2013 vintage, excuse me. Before we get started, Nacho, Demencia is Spanish for dementia.
Yeah.
Why would you name a winery after dementia?
Good morning in Spain.
Here that's is right. Afternoon.
You know, we have meal at 2:30 or something like this in Spain. So, the naming of Demencia is based on the origin of my dream.
Not your crazy grandfather.
No. I began the project and the idea in the beginning of my project is to make aging wines with Mencia. So that fit pretty nice today.
Got it. All right. So, give us a little background about Demencia. You know, we're talking Mencia now, and the region and all that, so people can sort of.
We're talking about the region that is such a different region along Castilla y León, as you talk about. Castilla y León is a very big region, rounded by mountains. And in one of the mountains in the northwest, in the middle of them, there is a place that is called Bierzo. It's close to Galicia, and our main river is not River Douro, it's not River Duero, sorry. It's River Sil.
Spell. How do you spell?
Sil. S-I-L-L.
Okay.
This river was born in the North Mountains and must be finished in Duero, but when arrived Bierzo, goes through a mountain and has to go west. So It goes directly to Miño and then to Atlantic Ocean. That's why we have got a wet weather, and our weather is not continental and Mediterranean. It's a blend between continental, because we are in the middle of the mountains. We have snow right now on the top of the mountains. We have a touch of Mediterranean weather because of the deep of the valley, and also the Atlantic influence that, for example, this year made us to receive more than 800 liters of rain. So it's a limit or a border frontier area. This is what we have in Bierzo. It's a lovely place for make aging wines. And this is the beginning of my project, the Mencia, based on Mencia. Another thing that I focused on was in the beginning was to recover all vines. Why? Because the vineyard there are usually treated by chemistry. You know, one of the things that our grandparents leave us is all vineyards, a great treasure, as Kiko told us, but also they gave us, in especial in Bierzo, poison soils. Yeah, this is what I'm trying to...
When were the soils treated? Like in the herbicide, 50s, 60s, 70s?
Yes. In our area, people work in the vineyards like Romans, with right. animals and, you know, with the... Yes, yes. Even the Romans take off a lot of gold for his empire in our area, yes. But in the 50s of the last century, 60s after the wars, the chemical...
more production.
Yes.
Quicker, cheaper.
Yeah, and so our grandparents these products, and the area focus on bulk wines,
right. for,
because we have a good quality, a good weather with
right.
variety,
better business, right.
So we have to say them thanks, because you preserve 100 years old vineyards, but everything from the past is not good.
So tell me about the process of reversal. So now you have these vineyards that were treated. What does it take to reverse them, and how long? And can it be done properly to your satisfaction?
It's a good question. I began in 2006. And my decision in the beginning was, of course, stop using herbicides and not systemic products. We are in a very wet area, and mildew is...
Unlike Kiko.
Yes.
Different...
Opposite.
...climate condition.
So it's like a nightmare, mildew.
Right. Mildew, mold...
Mostly mildew, also oidium, black rot, and other diseases that you never know. And anyway, I wanted not to use a chemical that goes into the flow of the plant. Only contact treatments. So it was hard, because we have some years, like this year, 23, that was so wet in springtime, I lose a lot of grapes.
But 23 was as wet as any year? It was a tough year?
It was so wet.
Okay.
23, 18, 14, 40, 13. We have a great difference between one year and another there. Anyway, this is very important in some point, because you lose it and you are not focused in quantity, but you are getting a stronger plant. And talking about the soils, what I really want to do is restore the natural fertility of the soil, imitating nature, no? So when I found a vineyard, I realized the plants are like adapted to the things of the of the things that we add to the ground. So the root system is not well developed. And what I want to do is develop these roots to get the real food that we have in our soil. This is very important. Yes.
Can we take?
Ask a question about how you are. Obviously, it's a really long process. And kind of a separate question: is the fact that it's so rainy and wet make it harder to?
At some point, rain helps, because it's a question of cleaning the soil, and we are in hill on the hills on the slopes, so we need time. Anyway, as the rain is too heavy in the past too, our grandparents use more herbicides than their grandparents, so it's more contaminated the soil. And the first question is, how long does it happen? I have two systems. One of them, more scientific, is taking samples from the soil analyze how many organic material I have there. My objective is around 4%. This is one of them. Helps a lot. But we are not only talking about organic material. We are also talking about another M, microorganism. So the idea is to clean the soil for develop the mycorrhizae and all the microorganism, fungi or whatever, that helps the plant to feed for the real minerals. That came also from the organic material, you know, the cycle in the life in the soil. So this is very important, and I try to measure the biodiversity of a soil counting the plants. So the species of plants that I have. In the beginning, when I have when I begin working a vineyard, usually I have 2, 3, 4, 5 species of plants, the ones that are resistant to the herbicides. As the soil is going more cleaner and cleaner, other plants grow spontaneously, like, I don't know how to say in English, sorry. So I try to count how many species I have in the vineyard. And when I get more than 50, more than 60, I think that the vineyard is clean in terms or rich in terms of microbiology. Of course, I have an APP of National Geographic.
Natural.
Is that, make a photo, and it helps a lot.
Is that like cover crops? You know, all
yes,
things
but not,
around the vineyard
but
that
it's
contribute?
It's natural cover crops.
Indicators.
Yes,
it's like indicators.
Yeah. But I do not plant any cover. All the herbs are spontaneous. And another important thing to me, as a member of an association of regenerative agriculture in Spain, in Catalonia, my decision in that point is not to break the soil. My decision is not plugging. I have some...
Literally break? Like tilling, that type of thing? Or?
In some point, when we are plugging, we break the soil for a thinner soil that is pretty good, for example, for vegetables or herbs or other crops. But when I really want to do a competition from other herbs for in especially in my area, because we have rain, of course, it's not a sample for everything, for everywhere. We need this competition for we need for the plants to grow the root deeper. They are like lazy because they receive fertilization and they receive also herbicides. There's no competition. They are not feeding the good things. Because all the things that we are doing is for getting a richer, brighter, and better wine. This is the concept. So the idea is this.
All right, so let's... Oh, I'm sorry.
Is there a way to measure like the depth of the root? Is there like some kind of sonar or something? Or can you guys see
you gotta dig.
Whether your root system's working nice or deep.
Don't you have to dig? You have to dig to look.
Yeah, not always. I think that the point is that...
I stole the word. Las arcillas, how do I say arcillas?
Clay.
The clays. I think that in general in the meseta, the clays or the mother stone, is like the limit where the roots are going. But not in all the parcels you can see how deep this is. Yeah, it could be even 4 meters. Why not? If in Toro, for example, when the soil is like very deep, the soil is very poor and are like digging too much. Even 4 meters, 5 meters. Why not? Yeah.
But not in my case. Not in Bierzo.
Nacho, let's talk about the wines. In front of us, we have...
What is the one that you serve? Is the Burgundy...
2014 and 2022. Can you check the bottle in the back?
I will talk...
So let's start with the 14.
Okay. I will talk a little bit about the Cachican, what it is.
Yes.
I began working in Demencia in 2006. My idea, as I told you before, is to do a natural wine in a special inspired in the recovery of soils and plants, all plants, and also for getting an aging one that you can keep in your cellar for a long time. No? Anyway, my philosophy goes so close to raw philosophy, and in 2013, I was probably one of the first Spanish guys that joined RAW in London, and I opened my mind in the point of the RAW philosophy, if I can consider a philosophy, and I made a test in 2013 of natural wines, red, white, and rosé, for learning. And 14 is the first vintage that I sell.
Okay.
I cannot remember the name, the number of bottles that I did. It's a blend field of my oldest vineyard, planted in 1905. It's not only Mencia. There is a lot of white grapes.
Godello,
Doña Blanca, Palomino. Some plants of Tempranillo, a lot of Alicante Boucher that we call Garnacha Tintorera, and mostly Mencia. We did a natural fermentation, not adding any sulfur. Since 13, I do not use, no, since 11, I do not use any selected yeast. What I did with the Cachican is try to experiment some risky,
like
wine making.
Okay.
Because when you are doing minimal intervention wines, you don't have the tools that conventional ones have. So
to manipulate the wines?
Some points manipulate,
right.
And sometimes preserve.
Right.
I really understand a winemaker that has got a great salary and move a lot of wines to add a lot of sulfur is his salary, you know. But with for me, Cachecán is like an experiment for doing things that later I apply in all of my wines, Demencia and Pijama. 2014 was a wet year, a lot of rain in harvest time, and a little bit of botrytis. Spent like 5 months in very old barrels, and it was bottled following year.
Does the botrytis add an element that makes the wine interesting, or do you have to get rid of it?
I think the best place for preserved wines are barrels and bottles. Crystal, or I don't know how to say it.
Glass.
All right, so. And I of course, I have like 10 bottles of this. I have a long time that I didn't taste it.
So we have the 14 and the 22, 8 year difference. Everyone take a sip of the 22 and let's talk about differences, you know, to your explanation about vintage. So 14 was very wet. What was 22 like?
14 is the one that is a little bit more smoky. Like, you know, when in the past, when you...
Phosphor? Like earthy?
No.
Matches.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like sulfury match.
Yeah. This is the 14. Talking about aging, that is the main theme to the question today. Sulfites could be a part of, but there are a lot of things that preserve. Christopher Columbus probably brought here Tinto de Toro, because alcohol is a conservative, and also
natural,
and also the pH in Toro, if you harvest properly, is a good one.
It's got the correct one.
Right. So the right grape from the vineyard is going to make a wine that is ageable, not worrying about sulfur, pH, acid, all that.
And tannins.
Tannins. So tell me about the 22. Tell me about, was it as wet as 14? Or
22 is probably the hottest year that I've ever been live.
How hot was it?
The plant was stressed, stopped the ripeness. The wines that the vintage gave us are not too alcoholic, and the acidity is not pretty good. So what I do for open a little bit the tasting of the wine is racking a little bit more the cup, the hot of the tank, the skins.
Right.
With my hands, and the maceration was a little bit longer, so probably you have some touch of volatile or something like this, that in my opinion probably could compense the lack of acidity in the vintage. Anyway, talking about volatile. This is the name,
yeah.
In some natural aging with flour, the yeast eat some volatile acid. So
wait, the yeast eats some of the volatile acid?
Yes.
Okay.
Some of the yeast. This is microbiology that I really don't know, but this is something that we have to improve in the future, I think so. Sometimes I usually say that I'm not a winemaker. What I really do is farming. I'm a farmer that preserves animals, microorganisms in that case, that are our allies for making wine.
That is,
and they are the authentic authors
that,
of the wine.
That is the story. I mean, you are right about that. Does anyone have any questions about Nacho's wines, the 14 or the 22? Anything else? Was 22 one of your toughest vintages?
Was 22, sorry?
Was it one of the tougher vintages to make because of everything you described? Or
It's hard.
It was hard?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, we're going to move along. Last but not least is our friend Julian Lopez. Julian is a third-generation winemaker. Makes wine from his family's 8 hectares in the Burgos, is that proper, Burgos area. He is continuing the adventure that goes back to his grandparents, so he's working on that legacy. Again, and this is a great common theme, his vines are mostly 100-year-old vines with some younger vines on the property. He farms at about 1,000 meters. What I noticed, and, you know, all of you could jump in. Julian, you could start. The vines, how do you describe them? They're freestanding, older vines. Are they goblet, head? How do you describe the type of vines? When you look at your vineyard, it's not what people expect. Rows and vineyards with wires and irrigation.
Sure, but I think hello everybody, my English is very bad, like Nacho and Kiko. I'm trying to make the best for you.
We speak super good English.
Okay, but it's a long story. It starts with my grandfather's. My name is Alberto Lopez Calvo. Immigrate 30 years in France. He worked in tonnerie, make barrels in Bordeaux and Demtos. And after when finished work in France, he come back in Spain and start the dream. He makes the wine in the land. And my little village, the name is Coruña del Conde. It's a little village, 80 people only live here at 1,000 meter altitude in Castellón, in the province of Burgos. And like he said, Sam, I work 8 hectares divided in 29 plots. The vines more younger, planted my grandfather in 70. And the rest of vines have until 80 years to more 130 years. My grandfather, who he is a little winemaker. He's the first man in Ribera del Duero represent natural wine. He make only 10,000 bottles more or less in the year. And the beautiful for the wine my grandfather try after, difference of me, he make only one wine every year. The same things every year. And every vintage is very different. And in 2012, he dead, my grandfather. 11 years ago, I don't winemaker in other life and streetwear. And a few months after that, my grandfather, I changed my life. I come back to the village of my mom because you earn my accent. I'm French from south of France. My father Moroccan and my mother Spanish. And come back to the village of my mom and 10 years ago. And from 2013, I work with my wife in the vine. I make the wine and many things. And today I try 3 wines different. One wine for me, my first vintage in 2014. The name is Alto Tero. I'm start to sell just this vintage this month. And after 2 other wine from my grandfather, 2011 and 99.
All right, so we're going to taste... We're going to start with one of the older wines today, right? We're going to taste a 1999.
No, now we'll start with the 14.
Oh, the 14?
Yeah.
The 2014 El Alto Otero?
Alto Otero. Why okay. Alto Otero? Because, no, this is, ça, c'est le dernier, ça. Ouais, on commence avec l'autre le 14.
Right. Do we have the right wines in the right order?
Yeah, sorry. The Alto Otero. Why Alto Otero? Because Otero is a mountain... one mountain for my village, 80% for the plot. I have around this mountain, Otero. Alto is up Otero, from up Otero, I see many plots. This is one part. This is the last. This vintage is 2014 for one plot. The name is Pelinas. He planted my grandfather in 70. He's all in Tempranillo. I make full damn step, 40 days maceration, 48 months in all barrel French, 225 liter. And after the wine sleep, 5 years on the bottle and start to sell in 2023 now.
So, couple of questions.
Yeah, sure.
The 14 is currently going into the market because of the aging in the vessel and then the bottle age. You have a thing called bottle dormitories. So you rest a lot of the wines in the bottles for a lot of years, right?
Yeah, 5 years. Yeah, sure. I make like this because I make many wines different. But the origin for my winery, you see in the next one with my grandfather, I have for my area, the material for make wine is during many times. Why? Because at 1,000 meter altitude is a climate continental, more contrast temperature in summer, 40 degrees in the day and 10, 12 degrees in the night. For this, the maturation of my grapes is more longer in another region. Start my harvest in middle October and finish beginning October. I'm work principally Tempranillo. Tempranillo is grapes very tannic. And for the altitude, 1,000 meter altitude, I'm very good acidity. The three things important for make wine in the time is tannins, alcohol, and acidity. Acidity is equilibrium to tannins and alcohol, they are both fresh, you know? And for this, I'm wait many times.
So are you using carbonic or semi-carbonic macerations on these wines?
Yes, another wine, but this wine now is full them stepped, 40 days maceration, okay. And make every 3 days remontage.
Pump over
in every 3 days. And when the wine is dry, no more sugar residual, and press. And after a few months, the wine in deposit. And after pass, and all barrel French have until 25 years, all barrel. And after, when and bottling.
Months. So the...
No, in vino.
The barrels are neutral because you're using them for 20, 25.
Yeah. It's all barrels.
Can I make sure we're correct here? The first wine on the left, help me guys, is the 2014 El Alto Otero, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And then the next wine is the 11 Alberto Calvo or the... What's the middle wine? And the last wine...
The last wine is the old... 2014.
Right, no? Otero, and then the middle one is the 11.
11, and the last
and
one,
the last
99.
One is the oldest one. Okay. Okay, so that's the 14 Alpha. Any questions about first wine we're tasting? All right, so next we're going to taste a different... We're going to taste a different wine, the 2011 Alberto Lopez Calvo. So this is a wine with... a dozen years of age. Julian, tell us a little about this wine. This is Tempranillo Cab Sauv Merlot. It's like a super Castilla.
Yeah, this is a wine of is the origin for my winery, the wine make for my grandfather. I told you before the beautiful for wine for my grandfather, every year, every vintage, the same things, but every vintage is totally different. He make 75 Tempranillo, 20% Cabernet Sauvignon, 5% Merlot. For the vines he planted in 70, every grapes he harvest in the first Merlot, after Tempranillo, after Cabernet Sauvignon. He make full them step, maceration, all fermentation. After press, every grapes he sleep in the deposit, separate every grapes. Until February, in February, he mix in the same stainless steel, and after go to the all barrels, and they make, depends the vintage, 24 months to 42 months in the barrels, and after wait 4 or 6 years in the bottle to start to sell. And this first Alberto Lopez Calvo is vintage 2011, and he passed 32 months and barrels, and wait 6 years before to start to sell.
So you may have mentioned this, but because your grandfather was in France, mm-hmm. Bordeaux and all of that, he introduced or grafted the Cab Sauv and Merlot vines to the vineyards?
Yeah, sure.
He did it because he was influenced by being in France and all
that? Yeah, good question. When he worked in France, he come back in 70 in my village, and he planted Tempranillo and Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot from Bordeaux. And for the 20 years he worked in France, cousin for my grandfather, work the vines, make wines. And when my grandfather come back definitively in 90, he start to make the wine with the vines every 20 years. And the lucky in my area, all my vines he planted my grandfather, and all vines more 100 years, never no pesticide and this. Why? Because I'm in a little village, in the little in the area agricole, and the people no use pesticide and herbicide simply because it costs money. And for this, is lucky for me. All my vines never know here this. And after for vinification, my grandfather, you know very good the. No, las virtudes de la zona. Virtudes. One of the good things for the area, the climate, the altitude. My land is claystone, and when he come back in Spain, he said, "I won't make only wine with grapes because his whole life he sees this in Spain, you know, because it's the area viticole and all family make wines for drink only with wine." And when he working in Bordeaux, when he arrived in the 50s, he's begging for the agriculture chemical. And he sees this every day. He don't like this. And when he come back, for this is the first and represent natural wine. He told every time, I make only wine with grapes, and I work clean and my vines.
All right, so let's taste the last wine. The last wine is the oldest of the eight. It's a 1999. It's the same wine as the last one, the Alberto Lopez Calvo, but it's a 99. Julian, it is a blend of Tempranillo, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Merlot, like the 11?
Yeah.
Do the percentages, the blends vary? It's the same?
Exactly the same.
All right, so we're talking about the ageability of natural wines. I think we know Cab Sauv and Merlot are certainly ageable from Bordeaux. Tell me about this particular vintage.
The vintage, the beautiful, you see the time, is exactly the same things, just the change. No, the wine stayed 24 months only in barrels, no 32, but the other things is exactly the same, and you try the two wine, it's totally different. You see the evolution of time, and that it, the work for vines, for make wine, and the time.
So let me ask you guys a question. Yeah. Has anyone in here before today tasted a 1999 Castillo y León wine? You have? All right, after this, we're going to give you a prize, an empty spit cup, but that's okay. All right, any questions on anything we discussed? Keep in mind, these guys are farming thoughtfully, naturally. You know, Kiko has his own take on all of this. There's, you know, Nacho deals with a lot of humidity, rain, mildew. That's not the case with you guys. So, you know, there's all different things going on. Any questions? Shoot.
So this might be a matter of semantics, but I guess to you guys, since you're winemakers, I'm not into something that we all know about. What is natural wine to you? So a lot of people say that.
Oh boy, you have another hour? This is the first guy to go ahead.
I'm thinking all the time that our region, Castilla y León, is a super traditional region. So when I try to make natural wine, I think in my great grandfather, as Julian says, think that 50 years ago has no money to buy pesticides, to buy nothing. So at the end,
thinking that Castilla y León is super traditional and trying to make natural wine, we are coming back to our grandfather's way of winemaking, you know? And I think that our region has a super good potential for that. I don't know why we are like a kind of a break with the natural wines. But natural wines, I think that raw wine makes something super good, which is to have a criteria to selectionate the wines. I think that it's a question of respect, of sustainability. But sometimes you, consumers, you have too much information. I mean, you have natural wines, ecological, biodynamical, blah, 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 blah.
Right. It's an overload almost.
Exactly. So I understand that we need limitations and some info to understand that huge wall of the wine. But the difficult thing is how to give value to the guys as we are, that we try to make our wines in thinking in the future and thinking to respect all the ecosystem and thinking in the next generation to make wine and trying to do our best in this way.
Nacho, yeah.
Naturally.
Do you agree?
Yes. For me,
I mean, it's a very broad term.
There is a book about natural wine that from Isabel de Reón that express very good what could be a natural wine, but a natural wine is a wine made focus on get a brighter wine with the authentic expression of the terroir using as less additive as we can. It's not a sin to use a little bit, but only if it's necessary.
Minimal intervention at the end, right?
Julian? But looking for the origin.
Julian, what
do you think? More easy. The natural wine, what it is, for me, is make wine only with grapes and clean, walk clean in the vines. In the wine, unfortunately, it's possible added 300 product analogic in the wine. And for me, natural wine, I repeat, make wine only with grape and walk clean. And that's it.
Grapes fermented.
All right, we have to wrap up. I want to thank our winemakers for talking about the ageability of natural wines and putting that in the context of the region where they grow their wines. Thank you to Kiko Calvo from Bodegas Brigardo. Thank you to Nacho León from Dimensia Wine. And thank you to Julian Lopez for Bodegas Coronia del Conde. Hopefully today we turned you on to the wines from the region. Now you realize that there's some very thoughtful winemakers and it's a large region and there's a lot of diversity in the region. So a couple things. When you get out of here, go outside and taste the wines. And when you leave here, go outside and buy those wines. Thank you to the Junta de Castilla y León, which is the organization, the Castilla y León, that helps make all this possible and advocates for, you know, these wines and, you know, for you to get to taste them and all that. Thank you, everybody, for taking time out of your schedule. for joining us at the Speaker's Corner. I'm Sam Ben-Ruby from the Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio. Have a good rest of the day. One last thing. Pascaline LePeltier, a dear friend of mine, will be here in a little less than an hour to talk about Austrian wines. That's our last Speaker's Corner for the day. Enjoy.
This show is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.